Happy Thursday on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, live from One Buck Palace, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, everybody's favorite podcaster, the man whose podcast is ranked so high on Google Play they don't know what to do. It's Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz with Lee DeCamper. We're JoeBucksFan.com. And Ira, your podcast, as always, is presented by the great folks at Edmore's Cadillac Tampa and Edmore's Cadillac Brandon. We're still in Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and at Edmore's Cadillac Tampa, they're holding their Drive for Hope event like they do every year, and supporting women in their brave fight by donating a portion of each sale to My Hope Chest. You can get more information on them at myhopechest.org. So when you lease a 2017 ATS sedan from Edmore's Cadillac Tampa for $329 a month, sign and drive, another great deal, Ira, you're supporting a great cause. Visit Edmore's Cadillac Tampa, just west of I-275 on Fletcher, or of course, go to EdmoresCadillacTampa.com. See the dealer for all the details, and the offer expires at the end of this month, which is around the corner. So this is a big weekend for shopping for vehicles and maybe shopping for a new football team if the Bucks can't get it done.
Is that what's called a win-win, Steve? Is that a win-win at Edmore's Cadillac?
Absolutely. Win-win. I mean, all the Edmore's dealerships are very much involved with community efforts, and many of them with My Hope Chest as well for the fifth year in a row. So yeah, you buy a car, they make a donation. All the details, EdmoresCadillacTampa.com. And at EdmoresCadillacBrandon.com, you got...
That leads me into my opening monologue, Steve.
Well, I'm not ready for it.
You're not ready for it.
Not ready for it yet.
All right, continue.
We got business to take care of. We have announcements. We got business. Edmore's Cadillac Brandon, Ira, clearance time. Clearance time. I know you love the clearance rack, Ira. Save up to 13 grand on remaining 2017 Cadillacs. Those are new vehicles.
These are new vehicles. Absolutely.
Save up to 13 grand for a limited time only. Get 0% financing, 0% for 72 months on the powerful Cadillac Escalade. Plus, you get free car washes for life at Edmore's Cadillac Brandon on Causeway Boulevard. Visit EdmoresCadillacBrandon.com. Of course, the dealer has all the details, and that offer expires at the end of the month. Now, Ira, your podcast, exploding as always. Podbean, people access it on the great app. Podbean, iTunes, Google Play. If you go to JoeBucksFan.com/podcast, you can see the whole Joe Bucks Fan family of podcasts where you can listen to those great podcasts. They're all there for you. JoeBucksFan.com/podcasts. All the podcasts doing very well. And Ira, I did take a look at the data because I know you love the data from your last effort. You picked up a rare listener. Rare listener, Ira. I've never seen this before. You got one in Kenya. Pretty good.
You got to be making this stuff up.
No, I'm not making it up at all. You know, tracks all the IP homes.
Isn't that where the marathon runners, the winners come from? Kenya? Maybe while the guy's running, he's got the thing going on his earphones.
It could be. It was a longer podcast last week. We did some longer podcasts.
All right, what else?
Actually, this was Tuesday's podcast.
Okay, what else we got?
We're up to 3 in Puerto Rico. Now, that was down to 0 after the hurricane.
Hurricane ravaged Puerto Rico.
I'm glad to see some of our listeners in Puerto Rico have come back online.
They don't have power, but they got Kaufman? Is that what you're trying
to
say?
Well, I'm assuming they have power, but they could be listening on their phones. Cell service is coming back. I'm not saying all is good in Puerto Rico since you have listeners again, but it's a good sign. And for those listening, you feel free to reach out to us on Twitter, at JoeBucksFan, at iKaufman76. And you continue to stay in double digits in Mexico, 12 in Mexico, Arab. You've got more Mexican listeners than any of the other Joe Bucks Fan podcasts, by far.
Well, part of it is that I do enjoy Mexican food, DeCamper. I just partook a little bit on Saturday night. A little El Grande plate filled with enchiladas and tamales and a little margarita to wash it down. Extra guacamole, of course, DeCamper. And we know DeCamper will not go within a metric mile of a Mexican restaurant. He's afraid of the ramifications.
Oh, no. I love Mexican.
There you go.
It's Middle Eastern food.
Middle Eastern, you're out.
That's a bad rumor, Ira.
What about my win-win monologue, Steve?
Well, we get last two pieces of business on the win-win monologue. Number one, details should be out any day. Next week for certain on your fan retreat to Atlanta, fanretreat.com. Great
that
supporter.
That is on, though. That is on. That's a go.
It's a go, yeah. We'll have the location and the details. We're the night before the Atlanta game in Atlanta with Ira making a speech and some special guests and all that fun stuff. Fanretreat.com, your home for tickets or travel, fanretreat.com.
That's the makeup date from the opener against Miami.
No, it's just a new fan retreat. No makeup date.
This is just
good stuff. That's
there you
all.
Go.
Wednesday evening, as everybody should know, you're on 5 o'clock. Chris Mad Dog Russo, Sirius XM Mad Dog Radio. If you can't catch it, It's on the app, right?
Yep.
Sirius Mad Dog
both
app.
Both online and on the phone.
Always fun hearing Ira talk about all subjects.
I end up defending Gerald McCoy and Jameis Winston because Russo, who doesn't see any Buck games, looks at the 2-4 record and thinks everybody's playing terrible.
And Tailgate Sunday is a must. Set your DVR. Fox 13, Scott Smith's Tailgate Sunday has Ira.
Doing it live from the field, Stephen, this week.
Live this week. So, Ira, welcome. The stage is yours.
One piece of business, though.
Yes, go ahead.
As I said before, you're talking about international listeners. You haven't made it until you get the Vatican.
Oh, I want the Vatican
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, get a listener in the Vatican, then you made it.
How about the Wailing Wall? That's apropos.
Oh, that'd be all
right,
yeah.
Steve, I say win-win because you talked about Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, and all the deals that they're offering. It's a win-win, and, you know, I'm going to refer back to my most recent column, Steve. There's time, but there's not a lot of time. There's not a lot of time. I give it 2 weeks. That might be even begging the question. They got to turn this thing around in 2 weeks or the season's over and heads will roll. I don't know which heads will roll, but there will be head rolling, and I'm not talking about the backup center. If they don't turn this around and if they're standing 2-6, you know, with a five-game losing streak, 4 games behind the Saints, because I think the Saints will beat the Bears this weekend at home, they'll be 4 games out of first place with 8 games remaining and already have lost to New Orleans and gone 0-2 in the division. This is it, Steve. They've run out of time, Lee. And you hate to say that before you reach the midpoint. They got to turn this thing around. I was in the locker room today, Steve. We'll talk about that. I'll give you some juice out of the locker room. But, Lee, they're up against it. This is the crossroads. There's no more time for adjustments. There's no bye week coming down the pike. I think they got to win both these games. Buck fans probably take one at this point. I think they got to win both. And it has to start this weekend. Otherwise, the season's down the tubes.
I don't disagree with you, Ira. And I don't think there's a fix. I don't think there's a fix. I think everybody's banking on last year. Like, hey, they turned it around last year. I don't think it's going to happen. Especially now that the two guys that you banked on for months to get an edge rush are no longer available. You know, sad thing, obviously we're recording this on Wednesday. Noah Spence earlier this morning was put on IR. That shoulder issue once again. Here's what basically it is. The Bucs have to go full-blown Don Coryell. Don Coryell had to outscore his own defense, basically, to win games. That's what the Bucs have to do, and it looks like they may just have the offense to do that by what we saw at Buffalo. That was pretty impressive. You know, Jameis damn near threw for 400 yards on a bum shoulder.
Against a good defense.
Against a very good defense. What, he doubled up the number of points that they averaged? They averaged under 15
yes.
points a game.
14.
Bucs put up 27 on the road with a bum shoulder quarterback, allegedly.
And not a good running game.
What running game? That's yeah. You know, now that it's a well-established fact that there's no edge rush, now we can start whining about the running game. Oh, yeah, Doug Martin, the savior. Yeah, And the Bucs have such an awful offensive line. That's why he can't run. Oh.
You know, Steve, one thing we're going to be talking about maybe for the rest of the season, and it's probably, you know, the number one debate topic, Lee, going forward, personnel versus coaching. It's a big, big running debate. But sure. I'm going to say this right now. We're not even out of October, and I feel very confident in saying this, and I don't even think Izbitz would argue, even though he might write this.
He's always got some comeback.
Steve, when it comes to defensive ends, they don't have the players. They don't have the players. What do you want Mike Smith to do? What do you want the D-line coach to do? They don't have the players.
Not even he can.
Not even Izbitz can argue.
No, he can't. He's not that crazy.
I'll give you this as a comeback here. Last year, you know who got a lot of snaps for this Buccaneers team at defensive end? A lot of them. Guys like Channing Ward, Ryan Russell. These guys played a lot of downs last year at defensive end.
And they had, what, 33, 35 sacks?
The team was ninth. The team was ninth in the league. No, the Bucs were ninth in the NFL in sacks last year because they blitzed. Not because these guys were ripping down quarterbacks. The defensive end issues are glaring. They're horrible. Robert Ayers is probably aged out here. I think Robert Ayers probably has a couple good games left in him, you know, but that...
Ayers talked extensively in the locker room today, and he said he's not making any plays.
I got to be fair about Ayers. He was always, a 7-sack guy, a 5-sack guy. He never was really a dominant defensive end as far as comes to sacks. He was a serviceable player, a good player, not a great player.
Well, I think his year before he got here was, what, 9 sacks?
Nine and a half.
That was his breakout year. I think the year before that he had 6. But that's what I'm saying is he's got 1 sack now, mm-hmm. right? I think Harris probably has a couple of good games left in him. Maybe he finishes this year at 4.5, 5. But, you know, maybe. Anyway, those guys played a lot, and we still had good defense last year. Robert Ayers wasn't lighting it up last year. He was injured a lot, which is why those guys played. One thing that troubles me a lot is the massive regression of Will Golston as a pass rusher. Because when he came in with Shiano, he had a few sacks. He was a very athletic guy. He's still very young. They haven't developed any kind of pass rush move out of the guy. It's just kind of sad. But now they're at the bottom of the barrel. But I think there's no fix to the defensive end issue. But, man, they've got to get through on some of these blitzes. I went over the film today, Ira, and you see they rushed Kendall Beckwith a lot, and they did play their share of 3-4, and Kendall Beckwith is just inept at rushing the passer, which is not his fault, but that's who came in. I don't know what you think's going to happen this week.
Well, why are you blitzing Beckwith rather than Levante Davis?
That's
my first question.
Thank you.
I'll make a bold prediction here, gentlemen, and Isbitz can write this down all he wants. Would any of the three of us be surprised? And a lot can happen, I understand, with the D coordinator position and whatever. Would any of us be surprised if they were a 3-4 base defense next season? I would not. Would you, DeKemper?
Well,
I don't believe it's happened since the early 90s. The Bucs have been a four-man front for almost 30 years. I think it's time for a change.
Well, if they have the talent to do it, and I think they do. I said this, as you know, I'm always on the Scuttle Bucks podcast, and I recorded that earlier today. I point to Wade Phillips. And I've written this before. And Steve just goes crazy when I say this. But you know what? The facts are the facts here. They've dabbled in the 3-4. Steve just said that they were running some 3-4. Mike Smith said this in his press conference today. He seems to imply that by playing more 3-4, they're neutering Gerald McCoy. Well, Gerald McCoy, when he lines up in a wide split, is devastating. Look what he did against Seattle, Russell Wilson. He was a monster because he lined up wide. If Wade Phillips can figure out how to run a 3-4 and still get production out of Aaron Donald, who was the best tackle in a 43 defense, look what he's doing with that defense. They got one of the better defenses in the league. Wade Phillips knows what he's doing. Why can't Mike Smith be a little bit more creative? Why can't Mike Smith figure that out? Or someone else on the staff? Would that be Duffner, a linebacker coach? Somebody, Cutter, constantly says, we got to get our best 11 guys on the field. Well, clearly, your linebacker unit is clearly the deepest. You can't tell me there's a drop-off in talent from Kendall Beckwith and Will Golston. You can't tell me that. Get your best players on the field. Figure it out. That's why you guys are paid 7 figures a year. And put McCoy at a defensive end and have him a wide split. You know, let's put it this way. The Bucs are garbage defensively right now. How much worse can they get if they start tinkering with a 34?
And they could get better. Steve, the
base
alignment that they decide on, next January or whatever, is going to have a direct impact on who they draft. You draft to your alignment.
Well, also, you're talking about next year's defense. We're not going to go too crazy with it. Lee's talking about Sunday. If they go 3-4 defense next year, Mike Smith's not the coordinator. You're not going to.
You don't think so?
No way. Not because he is not going to want to do it. He's not just not going to.
Well, if this defense doesn't come around, Mike Smith's not going to be the coordinator, Steve.
Right. This is exactly. Yeah. So here's the thing. When I went back to watch the film, the two guys I focused on with all the film options drive you nuts. Anyway, Baker and Doug Martin, since there's been a revived chatter about Doug Martin. But Swaggy Baker's a horrible football player. He's a bad player. There's nobody who's
going to... He wants more playing time, Steven.
Right. And, because Lee said before, and before the season, I'm talking about when it was still reasonable, that Swaggy Baker's played his share of 3-4. He's a garbage football player. He doesn't belong on the field.
That's a strong statement,
Steve. He is. There's a loaf in there. He's getting manhandled. He made 3 tackles. They're 3.5 in that game. One of them was credited to him. He didn't really get it. All of them were behind him. He didn't get any tackles
anything
to the side of him.
Pass rush?
All behind
Seeing
him.
Anything on a pass rush?
Nothing. He's just inept. Absolutely
inept. He's collecting
inept.
A paycheck.
These are very, very strong words from Isbitz.
Well,
very,
I didn't think he was
strong.
That bad.
It's
but
bad.
I didn't go back
it's and real
watch
bad.
The film.
It's real bad. He's just
Is he
inept.
Out of shape?
Well, yeah. What do you think? No one's going to describe him as high motor.
He was an effective player for the Redskins.
Well, he
collected a paycheck.
He's collecting a paycheck is what it appears to be right now, Ira. And he turned his ankle toward the end of that game, so who knows where he is now. But I don't think they have the personnel the way it is. They have to radically change some personnel because Baker's not the guy. But you know what? The blitzing worked last year. They just have, blitzing, so there is some luck involved with it. You got to get a little lucky. And I don't know.
Are you now going to excoriate Mr. Doug Martin, or are you going to explain a few things?
We'll save that later. We'll save that for later.
Oh, you're going to save that?
Locker room. Today, here we're at $1.
Okay.
So, Sage, you were promised us juice
right.
5 minutes ago. What'd you find out?
They say all the right things. Cameron Bray, Robert Ayers, J.R. Sweezy, how the locker room's going to stick together. And by the way, people waited for T.J. Ward to get off the ping pong table, and when he did, he was swarmed, and the Bucks, to their credit, brought him out and made sure he went to their locker.
Was he playing ping pong, or was he standing on the table?
Oh, no, he was playing.
I believe he was playing ping pong. Yeah. Look, I only stuck around for his opening line. I wanted to see his opening line, and from what I can hear, he said, I could have handled this a lot better.
Yeah, I was actually there.
I'm glad he said that.
Yeah, he sort of apologized. He said, hey, I'm an emotional guy. I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I should have kept it to myself. Steve and I, we really don't have an issue with that because it showed some passion with the guys. Like, wait a minute. You're giving up 75 yards in three plays, and I couldn't do any better? And to me, it showed that he cares. He has a little bit of passion. He's not just mailing it in and collecting a paycheck.
I thought it was interesting that Cutter went out of his way this week when he was talking about Ward's remarks to tell everybody, fans, media, that he had a private meeting with T.J. Ward a few days before they left for Buffalo. He usually doesn't offer up that kind of information. He didn't talk about the details of the meeting, but I dare say Ward was wondering about his role at that point. And Cutter said, you got to do this and you got to do that. And then if his role didn't increase in Buffalo, it tells me his play is lacking. Steve, tell me where I'm missing something.
No, you're not, but I hear exactly what you're saying. I don't think it was that real noteworthy that a coach met with a player. You know, I think that got a little overblown. I mean, Cutter probably meets with guys all the time one-on-one.
What I thought was notable, this was in Cutter's sit-down with Dan Lucas that I used a couple of excerpts on.
One of the 111 things you guys monitor on a weekly basis.
You got that right. Cutter said, hey, before you start pointing fingers, look in the mirror. That, to me, was basically saying, you want to play? And basically what Mike Smith was saying about Swaggy Baker, when Mike Smith said today he's a rotational player, and obviously Swaggy's whining.
That was his line. He's a rotational player.
To me, what Mike Smith was saying is what Dirk Cutter was basically saying. Want more playing time? Produce. Simple as that. Just take a Lovie Smith line.
The fact that Baker's a rotational player should not come as a surprise to Mr. Chris Baker. When he was signed,
they told him
he was going to split time with McDonald. And if he plays better than McDonald, he'll play a little more than McDonald.
Well, let's take it a little another direction. We're going to get back to the locker room right away. But here's the thing on Baker. I was going to save him till later.
got to lay off my man Swaggy
I called for him to get dumped on my podcast.
I'm the first guy that said he doesn't like to practice.
He's a bad football player. He's a bad football player right now. Anyway, Baker was what you were talking about. Rock Riley asked Mike Smith about Swaggy Baker's performance. And Mike Smith 100% dodged the question, didn't say he was playing well.
Said he was a rotational
Never said
player.
He was doing this good or that good. All he said was, he's a rotational player, and, you know, if they start running the ball more against us, I don't know if I want to see that because it means teams are grinding the ball out.
Right,
but if they get more runs,
he'll get
more time. Well, what did they tell you, Mr. Kaufman, what did they tell you in Washington when you talked to Washington officials? They told you Baker is better against the
Pass.
It was better against the pass.
Better against
they
the
told
pass.
You he's better against the pass.
And he's invisible against the pass.
And meanwhile, he's invisible against the pass. And so I thought that was very telling.
He's supposed to be the nose tackle that stuffs the run. And it turns out not to be.
He stuffs his face. That's it.
Wow, what a setup that was for you. What am I, Bud Abbott and you're Luke Costello over there?
Now, I just thought, what did you think of Mike Smith's response not saying anything good about Baker?
Well, it was very telling. I mean, if he had anything positive to say about Baker, he would have said it right at that moment. He didn't.
Well, whenever,
he said he's a rotational
whenever
player.
Mike Smith has anything positive to say about a player, his face lights up. Was it you last week asked him about Kwan, and he just beamed, absolutely beamed. He doesn't hide his emotions very well when he's happy about somebody.
Speaking of Kwan, he acknowledged that Kwan was rusty, and we all saw it. Kwan was rusty, definitely in Buffalo.
What else you got in the locker room? I already said you got some locker room juice. What else you find out?
Well, I cornered Ayers, and I had him by myself for about 90 seconds, and then the swarm came. But in my 90 seconds, I tried to remind him that they were 3-5 last year. And I mentioned this to Mike Smith, too. Lee was in the room. Look, Mike Smith was facing the same scrutiny up against the wall after the Oakland and Atlanta debacles last year. And that's the way they went into the bye week at 3-5. The Atlanta game was awful. The Atlanta game was a travesty. And that was a home game, I believe.
Blowout.
And it was on John Lynch Ring of Honor night. It was an awful night. Remember, that was the night that Lynch, Barber, and Sapp couldn't, you know, look at the replay board.
Brooks, too.
Yeah, couldn't look at it.
Yeah, just to reset it, you were with all of them watching on the sidelines.
I was.
On the game sidelines, and you were like, they couldn't even watch.
And they, you know, they couldn't believe what was in front of their eyes. So anyway, I reminded Ayers that, you know, look, you guys have a history. You did turn it around with a 5-game winning streak, at which point you controlled your playoff destiny for a brief time, for a week, you know. And Ayers was just looking at me. I wanted to see a little spark, a little something from Ayers that we could do this again. I didn't get it. I didn't get any juice.
I
didn't get any juice from Robert Ayers, you know, and he's usually – and I reminded him that he's the guy that a lot of players, you know, pointed out was the guy that took center stage at the bye week and said, we're better than this, guys, and got in their face. I threw that at him. I figure, you know, now I'm getting the juice from Ayers. And instead, I'm getting a Robert Ayers stare. You know, it's like the juice has been drained out. Look,
didn't he go after Jameis the Dallas game too?
He did say that he's not playing well. He did say that. Opportunities, he's not taking advantage of it. He didn't say he was hurt. He didn't say he was tired. But I'll tell you what.
And what's interesting is last year he was hurt.
I walked away kind of thinking what Lee thinks, that I don't really think they have any answers.
I really don't think so. Everybody's pointing to the Atlanta game as the turning point in quote unquote communication. That's something for a later date and a later time. But I just don't see it. I really don't see it. They don't have the horses.
This year doesn't seem to be communication issues. Communication issues are easier to fix.
Well, you
now you got personnel issues.
Well, you have heard coaches say guys are in the wrong spot. You know, if that's not communication, I'm not sure. What is?
It's tuning out, I think.
I don't know what it is. I mean, look, you had previously Bradley McDougal, the veteran, back there starting every game. Justin Evans is going to make rookie mistakes. Part of that's going to be alignments and whatnot.
But they had a rookie corner last year, Hargraves. You know,
sure. No, I'm not making excuses. It should be better this year.
When guys like Hargraves regress the way he does, it has to go to coaching. Why would a guy regress like that?
Steve, the difference in the third down performance is absolutely alarming. Maybe if they hadn't led the league last year, maybe if they were middle of the pack, you know, we wouldn't be all over it. You know, it's close to 50%, which is outrageous. Last year was 34%. That means two out of three times you're getting off the field. Now one out of two times you get. That's a big difference. I asked Smith today, is it a question of, you know, last year it was third and six, and this year it's third and three. Mm-hmm. And he didn't go for that necessarily. So, Steve, you can't allow a pop gun attack like the Buffalo Bills to convert 10 third downs. 10 what, third downs
what
for
I,
the Buffalo Bills? That is totally inexcusable.
On third down.
And Mike Smith knows it. Yeah. He knows it.
What Tom Bassinger wrote this or said this. He was in a panel discussion at the Times. Like, how they're going to fix their defense. He basically said it's not going to be fixed. He suggested the reason why the Bucs defense turned a corner like that wasn't so much communication, it was turnovers. I see his point. I don't disagree with his point, but I don't fully swallow it either.
Well, how do you get turnovers? You swarm to the ball.
Well, that's part of it, but it's not like they're not getting turnovers now. And the defense is horrible, so I don't think it's an apples and apples comparison.
It's certainly not that simple. Look, does anybody in this room here watch the Bucs against the Bills and say, man, this defense really gets after it? You know, they may be giving up a lot, but they're aggressive and hungry.
The hitting.
No, there's no swarm.
For example,
hitting.
Hargraves last year was a ball hawk. He was always around the ball. May not have made plays. Sometimes he tipped balls, but not this year.
There's a lot that's missing.
And so, to make it worse, the offense is starting to roll.
And on that note, Ira, I'd say probably the most disturbing thing overall in the grand scheme in the Buffalo game was, I think if you have a franchise quarterback, and you tell me if you disagree, if you have a franchise quarterback.
Let me write some things down.
A true franchise guy, that guy is going to win you almost single-handedly a couple of games a year because he plays lights out. And you know what? Jameis wasn't, quote-unquote, lights out, 100% perfect, but he had a great day against Buffalo, and he should have done enough to win the game, but they lost that game that their quarterback thrived, and that was like one of those two games a year you get where Jameis is going to, or any franchise QB is going to dominate, and they flushed it away.
They flushed Winston twice, Steve, They flushed them by not getting by not making the third down stop, Lee. That would have given Winston the ball back with a minute and 50 left, down by 3 points. I think every Buck fan would have taken their chances. And they flushed it with the earlier with the Adam Humphries fumble, because that could have been a winning drive for Winston, milking the clock. Setting up for a field goal or a touchdown with 15 seconds left, which is what Buffalo ended up doing to the Bucks. So, Steve, your point's well taken. People that don't watch the Bucks right now are going to look at 2-4 and say Winston's having a terrible season. He didn't play well against Buffalo. Nothing could be further from the truth. He's not having a sensational season, but he played lights out in Buffalo. He really did.
Jameis wasn't the problem at Buffalo. I know a lot of psychotic Bucks fans are trying to pin him with the loss. I guess they want the kid to be perfect. I don't. So what? He can't connect with DeSean Jackson. He does everything else well.
I quoted the Bills defensive end after the game, said this kid's going to be great. They're all stunned by Winston.
Any one game, you could split a million hairs. Yes. Look, Jameis missed Charles Sims wide open deep. Unfortunate. It was a third and long. They went for it, and they went for the home run ball, which you could say, Cutter, why is he going for a home run ball? But he went for it, missed him wide open, and then they passed on the 55-yard field goal to punt.
He also hit DeSean Jackson, which was wiped out by a penalty.
Yeah, he hit exactly. You go that way.
He gave him a touchdown lead with just over 2 minutes to go.
Oh, you know, I'm saying you could split the hairs anyway. I don't think he was lights out. He wasn't perfect, but this was an excellent game.
Almost threw for 400 yards.
And, they flushed it away. So as we move toward Buffalo here, right? Carolina. We got a game Sunday, Carolina.
Looks like Kuechly's going to play. He's back on the practice
field. Yeah, Kuechly was back on the practice field. Trey Turner, their excellent guard, who Gerald McCoy repeatedly says is one of the best guards in the league that he goes up against.
Olsen's returning, but not this week. And that's big. Greg Olsen kills the Bucks. He absolutely destroys
this
team.
Does Derek Anderson.
you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying. So, look, Carolina is better than the Buccaneers, but they're not great. But if the Bucs can't stop anybody, they've got a huge problem here, because Carolina can beat you many, many different ways. Beat you deep, beat you with Cam Newton.
You don't know which Cam Newton's going to show up, Steve.
And McCaffrey, they haven't figured out exactly how to use him, but the guy's caught 44 balls. He's a big part of the offense. We're not even halfway through the season. So what do you sense is coming?
Well, I think a lot of pressure on Buck linebackers on the swing passes to McCaffrey. And when he's in the slot, somebody's going to have to cover him, whether it's a linebacker or a safety. But they give a lot of screens to McCaffrey. They want the ball. Like Steve, 44 catches this early in the season, that's 100-catch pace. 100 catches for a running back.
Who was the Carolina?
Very rare.
Who was McCaffrey's teammate that said he was unstoppable? Come on.
You mean at Stanford or?
No, Carolina. He had, in preseason, the guy said he's unstoppable. Unstoppable where? Let's calm down.
He hasn't made an impact, Steve, at running the ball. He hasn't
not
really
at
made
all.
An impact. So, look. Carolina's struggling. Not a bad time to play the Panthers. No Greg Olsen, a thorn in the Bucs' side for years. You know, nobody can cover Greg Olsen on this team.
And this is what is beyond frustrating and why Bucs fans just want to ram their car into a mailbox. The division is the table's being set for the Bucs to make a run, and they can't do it because they have no defense.
Well, that's why I say the whole season's wrapped up in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think they have to win both. Have to win both games, not just one. They have to win both because the schedule doesn't line up well after this. And still, if you can't win both and you're in the cellar, you're halfway through, you're 3-5.
You're looking up at three teams.
And you're in trouble, and not in a good way. But, after these next two games, right? Let's say you do go 4-4. Let's say they find a way to win with offense. Like Lee said, they put up 30 points a game and finally that's good enough.
So then you got the Jets coming in.
Get a couple of breaks. Right. And you got the Jets coming in.
All right.
And you could be 5-4. Then you go three games in a row on the road. And, if you squeeze one of those games, then you're 6-6.
Then you hit December with a chance.
You hit December with a chance. So it's right in front of them right now. If you can't do it now, then see you later. So offensively, Ira, how do you think the Bucs attack Carolina here? Do they try to pound the football? Is Dirk Koetter going to say, you know what? I'm just going to air it out here. Jameis is the best I got. I'm going down with this guy. Because we have – you think Koetter agrees and believes that he's got to score 30 points, 32 points a game, or does he believe in Mike Smith's defense? For real.
Well, it's a very dynamic situation, Lee. I'll tell you why. Look, the Bucs were 1-3 and reeling last year, and they went into Charlotte, and they kept the ball on the ground, And they grinded out a tough defensive victory, which was a big one. And it straightened them out a little bit for a while, because they got back to 3-3 before the 3-5. But anyway, that was the Jacquizz Rodgers game. That was the Rodgers game. It happened to be against Carolina. But I'll say this, Lee. Given the ineffectiveness of Doug Martin in Buffalo, and some fans thought he was fantastic, what does that say about the offensive line? If you think Martin played well and he averaged 2.5 yards, you know, what does that say?
To be fair, he caught some good passes. I'll give him that.
But, Steve, what I'm saying is, if Doug Martin would have been effective last week, I could make the argument, pound the rock. Pound the rock and keep the defense off the field against Carolina. But, Lee, you can't keep putting yourself in third and eight situations, because Carolina thrives on that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they got to do the same formula they used. Run the ball 20 times and throw it 35 or 40. Mm-hmm. Spread it out. O.J. Howard's now emerged. Brate's a stud. You got Jackson. You got Evans. Carolina's secondary is not Denver's. I don't see a Keep Talib out there for the Panthers. To answer directly, yeah, I think Dirk Cutter's thinking we've got to score 30 points to win this game. Yes.
Well,
wouldn't you think that way?
Well, yeah, I agree, because I think he's got to go Don Coryell. His defenses are so bad. He's got to outscore his own defense. But I don't think the Carolina game last year is a good analogy, and this is why. One of the reasons they kept giving the ball to Jacquizz Rodgers, who was fresh off the street, is because Jameis was a turnover machine leading up to that game.
He was.
Terrible.
Yes, he was.
And it was to the point where Cutter was losing trust in him. Well, it's just the opposite now. One of the best defenses in the league, Jameis damn near hung up 400 yards. He put up 3 touchdowns. He had him with a lead. Complete opposite of last year when their Bucks were facing Carolina. So, Cutter's, he saw what Jameis did against Buffalo, and he's like, well, this is my best weapon. And I'm going a little sideways here, but I got to say it when I'm thinking about it. I know the last podcast we talked about what Jameis did is good for Cutter. We were talking about, someone's head, like you said earlier, somebody's head's going to roll. And I know, we kind of floated out like, what's Jason Light's security? And I thought of this morning. Who stuck out their neck more than anybody else to get Jameis here? Jason Light. Rich McKay. Yeah, we all know what the Glazers think of quarterbacks. Rich McKay never could get a quarterback here, or didn't want to. I don't know what. Yeah, he got Brad Johnson. He got lucky. He found a serviceable quarterback.
Bruce Allen did not.
Bruce Allen wouldn't because of Gruden. Mark Dominic couldn't.
Well, he whiffed on Freeman.
Couldn't. Yeah. He tried, but he couldn't. Yeah. And here comes Jason Light, and the Glazers want a quarterback, and 75% of the GMs out there didn't even want to touch Jameis because of his history at Florida State.
And quite a few Buck fans.
Many. And Jason Light stuck his neck out, and look what happened, and he hit the lottery. And so as much as Jameis is playing well, helps Cutter out, I think it helps Jason Light out, because the biggest decision this franchise has made in a decade at least, Jason Light nailed it.
Do we really know 75%? I mean, I heard you say 75% of the GMs didn't want Jameis. Do we really know
how many guys were out there saying this guy's trouble? The people.
No, I'm saying GMs. You said,
well, I haven't polled every one of them. I don't know.
I never really got the feeling that the NFL executive types, the scouting guys, were against Jameis. It was more the media guys, the Peter Kings.
I could tell you. That's what I can tell you. What's his face? Who was the coach of the Titans? His name ring. I can't think of his name right now. He was Ben Roethlisberger's coordinator.
Not Malarkey.
Wisenhunt.
Ken Wisenhunt. Yeah, Wisenhunt. Flat out said he was not drafting Jameis. Okay. Flat out.
Okay.
Flat out said he not touching him because all the off field stuff. And there was whispers out there. If you talk to the right people, that certain coaches want nothing to do with the Jameis because they thought he was out of control, or they didn't want his personality, or they thought he was sociopath of some sort. Yeah, Jameis had baggage. There's no question about that, and a lot of people didn't want to touch that.
What do you think? What do you think? What Lee said? I think in a nutshell, what Lee's saying is Light's going to get a lot of credit, or will get a lot of credit for drafting Jameis. But do you think the Glazers really are going to give him that credit, since it's at this point where we are now, it's almost old news?
Well, We don't know for sure the inner workings, but I think we'd both agree that Lovie Smith was totally on board with Jameis Winston also.
He could have blocked it with one word, no.
So we don't know whether the main impetus came from Light or from Smith. I think both. I think both were in agreement early on that it was going to be Winston, both of them.
Light was on Winston's bandwagon when he was at Arizona.
Steve, can they win these two games? Can they win? Now it's 1 week at a time. No, it's not 1 week at a time. You got to win these two games. Will they get some confidence if they beat Carolina going into the Superdome? New Orleans is playing good football, Stephen.
Well, here you asked this very simple question. Can they win the games? Of course they can win the games because they can score the points. If you can put up those kind of points against Buffalo, and now your quarterback's presumably 100% healthy, where maybe last week he was 90%, and you got O.J. Howard back in the mix.
You're not going to beat the Saints 20-16.
And you still have all your health on offense. Yeah, you can go out and score 30 points on anybody. So, sure, that means you can win a football game. You know, so I don't know. But, yeah, can they win? Yeah, will they win? You know, we're going to get to our predictions.
On the Winston and the 75% thing, I remember Peter King did a poll with GMs. And he, at the time, claimed that Winston was going to last to the second round, which was preposterous, but... You know, he was talking to GMs, whether they were conning him or not. He was getting the distinct impression that a lot of guys were against Jameis. A lot of you know, people with personnel decisions to make. So,
Steve, what else can happen in this wacky buck season? But Roberto Aguayo coming into Raymond James Stadium. Are you kidding me? This is like a Hard Knocks episode.
Well, it is fun. It's awfully fun. He's on the practice squad. Aguayo was signed to Carolina's practice squad because Graham Gano has got some knee issues, but Graham Gano hasn't missed a game. I looked it up in like 6 years, but we'll see. It would be just a wonderful Buccaneers soap opera, but I would like the Bucs odds a lot better if Aguayo has to be kicking.
And Murray did a good job in Buffalo.
I was just, you know, again, watching that game, Cutter passed on 2 55-yard field goals to punt. Man, you know, for an aggressive guy like he is with the play calling, which he's taking a ton of deep shots.
I don't know if we're going to see that kind of mindset going forward in terms of his confidence with the defense to make a stop if you punt.
How credible of a kicker is Murray at 55?
I don't know.
I don't know that either. That's why
I thought he had a very good record for the Bucs from 50 and beyond.
Well, that's a different era almost, isn't it?
A couple years ago, but yeah, whatever.
And we don't know what he was kicking like in pregame. We don't know if he was, you know, kicking from 50 okay, but anything more than that, he was shanking.
No idea. These were after he made the 50-yarder. And he made the 50-yarder by a few yards, so I don't know. It was, you know, just something to think about.
We don't even want to think about what the second half of this season would be like. 8 freaking, in the words of Mike Smith, 8 freaking football games that might not have any meaning. We don't even want to think about that.
We're down
but
there.
If they're
there.
2-6, Steve, all of a sudden, you know what Buck fans are going to wonder? Who are the best defensive ends coming out of the draft because we're going to pick in the top 5? That's horrible thinking.
Already, the position already is out there, and it's not defensive end. I read the comments at JoeBucksFan.com.
Running back?
Yes.
Barkley?
Yeah, they ain't going to get Barkley. Yeah.
Well, you know, look, people are always...
Last time I looked, Barkley ain't sacking the quarterback. Somebody's got to... And no, by the way...
You put Barkley on this team, you have elite offense. Elite.
Steve.
Let's put it out there. How ironic would it be if the Bucs are forced to go sign the most expensive free agent pass rusher because they're desperate when they could have had Calais Campbell this offseason.
For less.
And next year, or at least for the same money. They'd look just beyond stupid.
If what Peter Schrager reported, and I know Peter, and he doesn't put out BS, and he's got, you know, he talks to every GM out there. He's got context. Peter Schrager, NFL Network, Fox Sports.
And he likes the Bucs.
Yeah, he likes the Bucs. He claimed a couple weeks ago that during the draft, Light was frantically calling teams trying to trade up to get Dalvin Cook. And I have no reason to disbelieve it. So if Doug Martin is this manna from heaven that so many fans think he is, why was Light so desperate to draft Dalvin Cook?
Going back to last year, I just looked it up while you were chatting. Bucks played Carolina in the season finale, and which is a game that Cutter, you know, desperately wanted to have a winning record. You know, the Bucks weren't
mad. And they still had a 5% chance to make the playoffs, I think, going into that.
Oh, yeah. It was like,
a prayer.
I think it was like a point.
It was a prayer.
I think it was 0.5% chance. Yeah. But anyway, they Jaquizz Rodgers ran the ball 17 times for 75 yards. Yeah, very strong day.
Yeah.
Peyton Barber, 5 carries for 19 yards. So they ran it successfully on them in January.
Barber.
You know, Peyton Barber's a mystery, and Mr. Game Ball, Jaquizz Rodgers, is a mystery.
And they ran it on him successfully in October.
And so twice. Last two games, successfully ran the ball on him, and they're supposed to be better up front this year. So we'll see. Now, before we get to Martin, Ira.
Yeah, I got a question for Ira, too, a non-Martin question.
Trade deadline is coming up Halloween, Tuesday, trade deadline. Where do you think Jason Light's head is at right now as far as the record, what could be the record, the desperation for a defensive end? I'll throw two names at you. Malcolm Butler is a guy that the Patriots haven't re-signed, and Bill Belichick doesn't like to pay these guys top dollar. And he's a cornerback.
He's a heck of a player.
Heck of a football player. And he seems to fit two roles. One, he can come in and be a lot better than Robert McClain. Two, if Grimes retires, he could become that number one guy. And what do you think? He's not making much money now.
What makes you think Belichick would give him up in the middle of a season? They're shooting for another Super Bowl. Look, he's a heck of a player, Malcolm Butler. Now, he's the guy that made that fantastic play against Seattle at the end of that Super Bowl. Nobody ever heard of Malcolm Butler at that time. But he made an incredible play, not only diagnosing the play, but holding on to that ball, which was fired by Russell Wilson. You know, if he knocks it away, Seattle still got another down to play with. They might have won that game. But he comes up with that ball. I mean, that's one of the great plays in Super Bowl in postseason history. It's right up there. He's a heck of a player. He wouldn't come cheap. If Belichick was willing to part for him, I think he'd ask for a first-round draft pick.
No, he's at the end of his contract, end of his rookie contract. He's only under contract for the rest of this year. They were thinking of getting rid of him in the offseason because, again, Belichick doesn't like to pay these big contracts.
Well, yeah. But still, you're talking about a team with Super Bowl, with legitimate
Super Bowl
aspirations.
Okay, so you don't think they would trade him? You don't think they would trade him?
I don't think so, unless he's fallen out of favor with Belichick. But crazier things have happened. Who's the other guy? By the way, Malcolm Butler's not going to help you put the quarterback on the ground. Who's out there that can put the quarterback on the ground? Is anybody out there besides Darrell Tapp?
Well, I'll make you laugh. A guy who's stuck in a very deep defensive line right now, who's at the end of his contract, who's still viable, Adrian Claiborne.
Look at you like a vulture. Ooh. With the who's at the end of the Adrian, come on. Now you're at the end of your rope now.
Well, there's not a lot out there, but he's a guy.
He's injury prone.
Well, he hasn't. He's played the last couple of years.
He has. You know, he's a guy who's going to get you six sacks.
But he's got a motor, Ira. He's got a motor.
Steve, teams are signing Dwight Freeney. Does that tell you how the
Why
paucity?
Why did we sign Dwight
DeMarcus
Freeney?
DeMarcus Ware's getting phone calls and texts while he's on a TV show.
Does that tell you the paucity? Of pass rushers that are available in this league. Look, other than quarterback, I think it's the number one priority position.
I got to get this out of my system, and I got to preface this. I love Jason Light. I think Jason Light does a hell of a job. He's in a position that you're bound to make mistakes. It's not fantasy football. You're not going to be 100%. He's the best GM this team's had since McKay. Perhaps as good, if not better, than McKay. What he was seeing with defensive end, I just don't know. He didn't go out and get Julius Peppers. He didn't go out and get Chris Long. He didn't go out and get Calais Campbell. I mean, and he banked on two injury. Well, one was injury prone coming off surgery. The other guy was a rookie coming off surgery. I don't understand why Jason has not been more aggressive at this. I don't get it. Now, maybe he was the guy texting DeMarcus Ware. DeMarcus Ware was on Rich Eisen's show, and he said, 15 minutes before I came onto the studio, I'm getting a text from an NFL GM. I hope that was Jason Light, I think the world of Jason Light, but I just don't understand why he's had this sit on my hands and hope and wish and pray that a 53-year-old ex-All-Star first baseman can give me six sacks. I don't understand.
Let me put this in simple terms, Steve, what Lee's saying also. The Jags have 33 sacks. The Bucs have 7, correct? Okay. That's a plus 26 for Jacksonville. Now, what does a sack do? I've been thinking about this. On third down, a sack forces a punt or makes you kick a 40-yard field goal instead of getting a potential touchdown. Those are 26 impact plays.
Yes.
This is not quarterback hits. These are guys on the ground. So if it's second down or first down, the odds are they're gonna have to punt in that sequence.
Yes.
That's 26 punts or 26. Steve, that's 26 impact plays. That's like 4 impact plays a game. That's the difference between the Jags sharing first place and the Bucs, taking up residence in the cellar. 26 difference in sacks is enormous. You can't make up for that. And I don't care how bad Blake Bortles is.
Can I say this one about defensive ends real quick? You know, and like I said, I think the world of Jason. And his position is meant to make mistakes. It's just how many, you know, just you got to limit them. But, you know, at any rate, look at the teams that went out and got free agent defensive ends and look what they're doing. Peppers goes back to Carolina. Look what they're doing. Looks like they're on a playoff pace. Philly, they go out and get Chris Long. Look where they're at. What was another guy? Calais Campbell. Look, there were guys out there that were available, and the teams that got them dramatically improved.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't think Jason Light's the. You know, maybe he's above average. Do you put him in the McKay class? Larry Lee said he might even be better than Rich McKay.
Well,
McKay could not draft offensive players to save his life.
You know, Light
outside of work done and Mark Alstott. Mike Alstott, the famous John Gruden line. Mark Alstott.
You know, Light's weak spot is free agency. I think at this point it's free agency. He's hit on some beautiful draft picks. With those two linebackers, outstanding.
Jameis, of course.
You know, and Jameis, of course.
Mike Evans.
But Steve, he's going to have to answer for the free agency market, and more specifically, this year's free agency market, because they were coming off a 9-7 season, and one guy could have made a difference. I don't want to beat up Calais Campbell forever.
Well, it's one player.
Expect him to be on pace. You know, this guy's not supposed to get 16 or 18 sacks.
True, but like I said, he wasn't the only one out there. You know, I mentioned a couple others. The teams that got him, they dramatically improved.
And we don't know what role the Glazers played, if any,
in
bypassing Calais Campbell. We're not exactly sure.
Well, look, him you can almost throw him out there because you don't even know if he would have. It's so maybe let's say.
Well, he would have went for the money.
Well, hypothetically, let's say the Bucks matched the money. We don't know who he would have chosen anyway.
That's fair.
We just don't know. So I mean, he's a guy who's not here. I think, I don't know, before this season, I put a B grade on Jason Light, solid B grade. At this point right now, I'd have to give him a C-plus overall. You know, I don't think, I think he's been good, but certainly not stellar. You know, we still got time to go, though. The season's got to play
hard,
out.
Hard grades aren't helping him.
For a guy to regress like that, either there's something off the field that's going on or it's a coaching issue or both.
Yeah. I mean, but sometimes that's can be on the GM. If it's personal, maybe it was something they could
we
have spotted,
can't
or
let this coaching
or
staff
coaching.
Off.
Maybe he was the wrong mentality fit for the coaching staff. You know, this
Steve,
I don't know.
We can't let the coaching staff off the hook.
You're
not about.
We're not. We're not. We're not whatsoever. All right, Ira. Prediction. Game prediction, Ira. You want me to go first since you wanted me to last week?
I don't want you to go first. But right. The Kemper and I both went out on a limb and picked the Buffalo Bills. And we didn't want to.
No.
But we did. Now, the Bucs could have won that game, having said that. I got to take the Bucs at home. I mean, it might be the last time, Lee, I'm picking the Bucs in the 2017 season. they've played pretty well at home. They've played pretty well at home this year. They destroyed Chicago. Chicago's not as bad as we thought they were. They beat the Giants. And the Giants are not a bad football team, even though we're 1-5. They're not a bad. They went into Denver and throttled the Broncos. Outplayed them from start to finish. Mm-hmm. You know, they played New England okay. Look, they're a lot better at home than they are on the road. Let's just put it like that, especially defensively. Carolina doesn't scare me. Carolina's not playing particularly well. People are screaming in Charlotte, what's wrong with the Panthers? What's wrong with Rivera? They have to have this game, Steve. Pure and simple. Lee, 2-5, throw some dirt on them. 3-4. Still got a pulse. I'm picking the Bucks. Won't be easy, but the Bucks are going to win this game, and they're going to win it. They're going to win it 27-20.
Ooh.
There you go.
Well, I don't know what to do with this game because you don't know which Bucks team is going to show up. You don't know which Panthers team is going to show up. This defense is so rotten. Until proven otherwise.
Even with the home cooking.
I'll go Bucks in a shootout. 35-31.
There you go.
this is
and
fun.
Now it's up to the sage.
This is what makes it fun. You know, I promised myself last week. You know, I've picked the Bucks every week. Promised myself after last week's game that I simply have lost faith in this Bucks team because they haven't figured out how to win. They just had, they lost their edge to figure out how to win.
This podcast is a secret jewel. it is. It's
so
good
I'm
going to
stick with that. Thank you. I'm going to stick with that. They've lost something, And I do think Carolina's a good football team. I definitely think they're a good football team, and I really don't think they're going to have a lot of problems stymieing the Bucs with their diverse offense. Maybe the Bucs get some turnovers. They certainly still have the athletes to get turnovers and cause a lot of havoc and score points, but I still think this is Carolina's game, so I got to go Carolina 24-21.
Can they create some havoc, force Newton into some turnovers, Steve?
Sure. Will it be enough? I don't know. But as Lee, I apologize profusely. As Lee wrote many times during the Lovey era, turnovers in many instances is just luck. You know, it's pure chance. If I'm giving the readers an honest assessment, listeners, I got to go, can't believe it, but I got to go Panthers 24-21.
Aguayo play? Aguayo make some field goals?
I hope so. I hope he plays, because like, then I might be wrong, because I would like that. I figure the Panthers 3 touchdowns, that's 18 points, no field, no extra points. It could look good.
Get out of here, Steve.
All right. No, I'm not getting out of here. I got one. Let me throw this out here.
Did you give us the Doug Martin assessment?
No, he didn't go on soliloquy.
Looking at Martin, and I didn't bring a page of notes to go into Doug Martin, but he's definitely lost some burst. He shows some burst. He's got some nice inside work and is running hard, but I think he's lost some pure burst. And I'll put 3 plays on there where he either missed the hole, didn't hit the hole. He had a little bit of Charles Sims dancing going on. Some bad decisions running the football by Martin. I think he left 12 to 13 yards on the field easy.
Does he make the first guy miss like he used to?
And I will send people just for fun. Go look at the first carry of the game. First carry of the game, got to go to the all 22, see what Martin sees, and ask yourself, why didn't he hit behind Sweezy where the play was going between Marpet and Sweezy? He was got the ball about 6-7 yards deep in the backfield, Ira. He sees somebody coming on the left side who's beating O.J. Howard. Guy wasn't there yet. He sees him, stops dead, and then tries to go around the guy outside, and there's another guy waiting for him. When he had at least a 1 yard gain in front of him, lost him, cost himself 4 yards, put the Bucs in an early hole. There's some stuff like that going on the film. He's just not a, I would give Peyton Barber a start, see what happens. I'm not saying Doug Martin's a bad football player, but not the guy we want here.
I got 3 quick things about Martin. He brought up, Steve brought up one of them.
Didn't you speak your piece on Tuesday?
I want to clear a couple things up. But what Steve just brought up was my issue with Martin last year. No vision. There were runs that were available, but he had his head down. His vision, for whatever reason, is wacky. I don't get that. A lot of our readers are convinced that we despise Doug Martin, which cannot be further from the truth. Steve and I want the Bucs to win. And oh, by the way, when the Bucs win, it's financially advantageous for us. So if Doug Martin's playing well, the Bucs' chances of winning are a hell of a lot better. So damn right I want to see Doug Martin break off 120 yards every game. You darn right I am. If he's on the field, I'm rooting for him. Number 3 with Martin. Steve was talking about his first step is gone. 3 years ago, I had an NFL general manager say to my face, the first thing a running back loses is his first step. Then the same NFL general manager added to that, the closer you get to 30,
more likely.
Yes. And he said the first thing to go in any running back is the burst. So when Steve said that, I'm like, uh-oh. And I remember what I was told 3 years ago. And how old is Doug Martin after the season? 29.
Yeah, he's 28. He's in his prime. He shows plenty of burst on plays, but it's not what it used to be. And sometimes the decision-making isn't there. Just like on that first play, when you think a guy's hyped up, hammer the whole first play, power football, make a statement. He's
tentative,
stopping.
Are you thinking?
I don't know, Ira.
Well, all 3 of us are going to be out there Sunday, Steve. And what do we want to see? Physicality on both sides of the ball, which I think has been missing. And a real sense of excitement, swarming on defense, swarming.
Well.
Look, this is an undersized defense that relies on speed. Swarm.
Are you talking about gang tackling?
You know, yeah. if the first guy misses, then there's another guy.
Okay, I thought maybe you're talking about swarming the quarterback.
That's the old Buck formula. Yeah. First guy misses the tackle, there's the next guy. He's right there. That's been missing.
Yes, so, it has. Oh, terribly know, so.
I want to see the physicality, and I want to see some good hitting on both sides of the ball, Steve. If we don't see it, the odds are the Bucks aren't going to come out.
It's got to be physical. I'm curious to see if there are some lineup shakeups on defense, if that's a possibility. Maybe they start this new guy, Tapp, whose best season was in 07, which we'll just leave it on that note. All right, Sage.
All right, let's hope it's a happier podcast.
You know, I do have a question for Ira.
Tuesday. Oh, final question.
Yeah, we got to get this out. It's
sort of the rhinoceros in the room, to use a term that Steve coined. Simeon Rice going on Twitter begging for a job. Your thoughts?
You know, if it was anybody else, you'd dismiss him out of hand. God bless Simeon. He still can't believe his career ended with that shoulder injury. I think it was the first major injury Simeon Rice ever had as a pro. I couldn't believe it when the Bucks cut him that year. I thought the Bucks made a terrible mistake. Turns out they knew what they were doing. He was never effective again. Dungy brought him out there to Indy. He cut him, you know, a week later. If you can't play for Dungy, you can't play. And, you know, God bless Simeon. I hope he comes here and continues to work with the young Buck defensive linemen, because I think they can learn a lot from Mr. Rice.
Is he hurting for money?
He's a fledgling filmmaker. I'm the only guy in America that's seen both of his films. I've seen both of them.
Yeah, I don't think he's hurting for money.
And they're not bad.
Just because the several interviews I've heard of him, he sounds extremely financially secure.
Well, that's good to hear, because it just piqued my interest because, you know, Tuesday night he goes on Twitter and he looks like he's begging for a job.
You know,
and the night before, he puts out on Twitter, "Hey, I'm selling my clothes in my closet. If you're interested in my clothes, like, why would you be selling your clothes?
You know what? You know one thing I should remind young Mr. Rice, Steve? If he plays one down
young
in the NFL, one more down,
no,
he's got to wait another 5 years.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll cool his jets.
I thought of that. I'll say this. We'll close it on this just because it's kind of fun. If I were Team Glazer, I would march into Jason Light's office and I say, you know what? Simeon Rice is an icon of this organization. I want him in here for a workout. We owe that to the fans. We owe it to Simeon. We owe it to our history. If he's no good, he's no good, but bring him in here.
Attention, Ed Glazer.
That's what I would do, because that would be a good statement for everybody. And
that we leave no stone unturned.
We leave no stone unturned, and you know what? It would be a hell of a lot of fun.
You know what? You're going to close on this, but I got to add this. That's why, you know, the fans are in an uproar. Why aren't you bringing Dwight Freeney in here, et cetera, et cetera? And maybe Jason, you know, I don't even claim to suggest I know an iota of football that Jason knows. But just to save face a little bit and calm the masses down, bring the guy in here. If nothing else, say, well, he doesn't have it.
And
but
I think,
at least you're trying. You're showing the fans you're
and
trying.
And I think Isbitz wants to take it one step further. And maybe he'll do this on a future podcast. But I believe Isbitz wants James Wilder in for another workout. So we'll leave it on that.
Why not?
Get out of here.